This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
We've been searching for that time to get on some sort of a roll here to get that good feeling, and you need a game like this to give you a chance.
We're still struggling to try and score goals night in and night out, but we've been able to do that in the last couple games.
It doesn't get any easier as the season moves on. Road games get tougher and tougher.
There's not an easy answer to that.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Ezra, Dave, and Drew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
TSN1290.ca, we welcome you to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. Winnipeg Jets training camp underway. You know that's going to be a focus of our attention for the better part of this program. The hockey season is upon us. You can feel it in the air, Dave. That chill in the air certainly tells you that, you know, fall is here and the hockey season, as I mentioned, is rapidly approaching. Sort of an exciting time. As sad as it is that sort of summer is coming to an end, because we all enjoy the beautiful Winnipeg summers, it is a little disappointing. It is a little exciting at the same time that the hockey season is upon us.
You know what? I always get annoyed when I see people tweeting, is it October yet, when it's July and August? Because I'm thinking to myself, we're in Winnipeg. You know, let's enjoy our summers. Let's not worry about pushing past that and getting into a cold season, which is inevitable here in Peg City. But now it's totally acceptable. You want to go mid-September and start tweeting, is it October yet? That's fine. And it is upon us. It feels like it. We're hearing tons of audio from the players. And, of course, training camp for the Jets got underway with on-ice testing yesterday. So hockey season is certainly here upon us.
And they have hit the ice, of course, this morning at the Bell MTS Iceplex. They got the name right.
I know. Very impressive. I'm going to get it wrong a lot.
No, so am I. But they've hit the ice there. I'm sure a lot of people in attendance. Of course, the Jets Fan Fest taking place as well outside there at the, or inside the Iceplex today. So if you're looking for something to do on this rainy Saturday, that's something that you can do. We, of course, start this Saturday morning with the biggest news out of Winnipeg Jets camp this week. And that was the announcement of Brian Little's contract extension. It's a 6-year, $31.746 million contract extension for the Winnipeg Jets centerman. It's a salary cap hit of $5.291 million per season. It starts after this season concludes, so it kicks in for the 2018-2019 season. And it's, as I said, a 6-year, $31.746 million contract extension. Ezzy, good morning to you, of course. Your thoughts on the contract extension from Brian Little. You know, this is a guy who has, you know, had some freak injuries the last couple seasons, but he hasn't played 82 games in the last couple of years. So your thoughts on the Brian Little extension? Do you have any, does it give you any pause, or is this something you said, you know, the team probably had to do this this extension?
No, I really like the contract, Drew, and, you know, I think there are some fans out there who were a little bit concerned about the last couple of years of the deal. But I mean, when you're talking about Brian Little, you're talking about probably, with the exception of Blake Wheeler, the most consistent player the Jets have had over the last 6 years. And when you look at the cap hit, as you mentioned, I mean, you're talking about a raise of $500,000 for Brian Little. So it's not really going to affect the salary cap much next year and in the years after that. So when you're talking about Little, he slots in so well as the number two center now behind Mark Scheifele. So to know that you have him locked up now for the next 6 years, I think, is very important. And, you know, you could maybe argue that Brian Little should have got a 4 or 5 year contract, but the reality is, what are we talking about here? An extra year or two? So, I mean, we've talked about Brian Little a lot on this show. I mean, Dave and I are big fans of Brian Little. I know you are, and I know many Jets fans are as well, but I think he's really underrated for what he does. And maybe when the Jets first came over from Atlanta, maybe he wasn't ideally suited to be a number one center, but now with Mark Scheifele there and him developing as an elite number one center in the NHL, I think Brian Little slots really nicely there as the number two center. And you have to ask yourself, guys, you know, if they don't make this deal and they don't sign Brian Little and he becomes a UFA, who's replacing Brian Little as the number two center? I think that's the obvious question. It's certainly not going to be a guy like Jack Roslovic or Adam Lowry, and that's no disrespect to either two of those players, but those guys just can't step into a number two center role. And then you have to ask yourself, well, how do you replace a guy like Brian Little on the UFA market, right? Because those types of players don't grow on trees. So I really like the contract. I think Chevy did a really good job here, and I think Chevy deserves a lot of credit for the Mark Scheifele contract. You could argue that a guy like Mark Scheifele should be making $7-7.5 million a year, and we know that he's making a lot less than that. So no problems with the deal at all.
Dave, your thoughts? As he mentioned, you know, the Jack Roslovic factor. I mean, Roslovic obviously not ready to be a number two center in the NHL. He'd probably be a few years away from that. So you're maybe looking at a situation where Roslovic, if he continues on a, on an upward trajectory with his development, you go up the middle with guy, with, you know, Scheifele, with Little, and with Roslovic over the next few years in terms of Winnipeg Jets centermen.
Yeah, and again, I think that becomes a function of the good news is you're protecting prospects, and I think that's not a bad thing. I think that the key for this organization as a, quote, draft and development type of team is that you don't rush players like we saw with a guy like Alexander Burmistrov or even Evander Kane to a certain degree, Zach Bogosian. You have a lot of these young players that were rushed into the NHL, and perhaps it hampered their development. So now you've got a guy like Jack Roslovic, who is a solid center, and you just can't, in my mind, afford to push him into the NHL too quickly. So I think this Little contract will do wonders for insulating Jack Roslovic and allowing him to continue to develop with the Manitoba Moose. I like the contract, as he just touched on, and pretty much all the points that has made, I agree with. You know, I mean, sure, the contract's a little bit long, and I can understand Jets' hesitancy because Brian Little, I think, will be 37 by the time this deal wraps up. But, you know, the truth is, as Ez touched on, and it's a good point, who are you replacing him with? There's nobody on this team that's replacing Brian Little. People kind of underestimate how impactful his play is for this Jets team in just pretty much all facets of the game. So I think you have a player like Brian Little as your number two center for a number of years to come. Then you have Jack Roslovic, you know, hopefully being your third line center, maybe comes in at that point in a year or two, does that. And then you've got, again, you've got a Lowry, Adam Lowry, in my mind, is ideally your fourth line center, not a third line center. So that would be my vision, if you will. And again, you could have a Nick Petan as well, be a third line center potentially. But my mind is you have Roslovic being insulated. You allow Little to kind of be in this role, maybe a little bit long. And then eventually, you know what happens? He gets supplanted in the 2C by a Jack Roslovic, if he can do that, maybe in the later years of this contract, and Brian Little slots in as your number three center. So in my mind, it's a good deal. It's a little bit longer term, but you know, that's what you're going to have to pay for when you want to get a player like Brian Little signed to a big deal like this.
What about the salary cap ramifications on the Winnipeg Jets? I mean, it's, you know, you can't look at any contract strictly in a vacuum. Are the Winnipeg Jets going to be running into salary cap difficulties in the next few seasons when you consider this contract, when you consider Nikolaj Ehlers is a restricted free agent at season's end, when you consider, you know, Patrick Laine, you know, we see what Connor McDavid made on his second contract. Now, it won't be to that extent, but it could very well start with a 9, maybe an 8. You know, are the Winnipeg Jets going to be in salary cap trouble, and are they maybe going to regret handing out this amount of money to a guy when he's 33, 34, 35 years old a few years from now?
I don't think that this is going to have a negative effect on the salary cap, and when you consider that we talked about that before, he's only going to be making $500,000 more. Obviously, Patrick Laine, Nikolaj Ehlers, they're going to be making much more on their second deals, but when you're talking about, you know, the salary cap potentially going up more than it has in previous years, I mean, and that's what they're predicting, especially with the expansion team coming in and the new television deal that's going to be coming in the U.S. So I don't think it's really going to negatively affect the salary cap. I wanted to play a clip of Craig Button, though, Drew, because he talks about what he thinks Brian Little could get on the free agent market. And I think it makes a lot of sense because, you know, Brian Little, I think, could have made over $7 million a year. So this was Craig Button on Thursday's Roundtable.
So, you know, when you're a centerman and you're productive and you're a solid competitor and really, I mean, Brian Little's a really good player and not just offensively in so many areas of the game. So, you know, when you, that type of player at that age ends up on the market, I don't think there's any question that the Dodgers could have approached $7 million because there simply is not those types of players that hit the market. So when they do, there's a rush on them. And, you know, when demand exceeds supply, it's simple economics. Prices go up. So to me, I don't think there's any question that Brian Little would have got a lot more on the open market. But, you know, and it's not just about the open market, though. It's about a whole lot of factors. And I think where you play, how you're valued, what you think your chances are of winning, I think those are all really important factors. And obviously, Brian Little put a lot of stock into that.
And back to your question, Drew, you know, when you're talking about Nikolai Ehlers, I think Nikolai Ehlers could probably make $7 or $8 million on his next deal. And when you're talking about Patrick Laine, we could be talking about a $10 to $11 million player, right? And I don't think most Jets fans are going to argue with that when you consider that Laine had 36 goals in his rookie year, and he might be well above that this year. He might be a 50-goal scorer this year. But I think when you're considering that Little's only going to be making, you know, just over $5 million a year, I really don't think that that's going to handcuff them going forward.
Is it just one of those situations in this day and age in the NHL is you have to sort of worry about your salary cap problems when they come as opposed to preemptively worry
right.
about them? We've seen that with Chicago with so many years as they gave out the big contracts and then they said, okay, in the off seasons, if I have to juggle around, I will, but I'm going to keep my core together no matter what.
Well, I think that's the point, right? If you're paying Brian Little $7 million a year, yeah, I think that is really going to hurt you down the road when you have Laine making 10 and you have Ehlers making, you know, whatever it is, $7.5 million a year. You have, you know, Mark Scheifele making what he makes, you know, which I think is a bargain for Mark Scheifele. But you're also going to have to be paying Jacob Trouba $5-6 million a year. Jacob Trouba probably wants $7 million a year. He'll probably even ask for $8 million a year. He's certainly going to get at least $5-5.5 million a year on his next deal, right? So I think Chevy did really well right here. I think that when you're talking about what Brian Little brings to the team, even Dave, if 3 years or 4 years down the road, if he's making $5.3 million a year as a third line center, I think he's worth every penny.
No, I agree. And I have to suspect that, you know, Larry Simmons, the assistant general manager of the Winnipeg Jets, is for future casting, to your point, Drew, what this roster is going to look like with, like, these guys don't just hand out a contract, as you talked about, in a vacuum and say, okay, you know, this is what Brian Little's entitled to, without considering the ramifications to the overall salary cap, to knowing what they're going to have to pay a Nikolai Ehlers, what they're going to have to pay a Patrick Laine, a Josh Morrissey, a Jacob Trouba. There's no doubt about it. This team is going to have to pay out some money, big money, to these really good players. But that's not necessarily a bad thing because, you know, they've kind of kept their salary, relatively speaking, lower to that effect, right? And now you're going to have to pay for it, but it's not a bad thing. You have players who deserve bumps in salary simply based on their play. So if you're a team that is on the upward trajectory, as you talked about, and, you know, having to pay out these contracts, you're going to do it. But again, like I said, I don't think they ever obviously do a contract in a vacuum. They've clearly understood. And as Ezzy just touched on, and we've said numerous times, the Scheifele contract is saving them, in my mind, at least a couple of million a season. So they're going to be able to redistribute that towards another player. Now, obviously, when you're talking about guys who are making $6 or $7 million, it's a different story. I mean, but it still doesn't hurt. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. at the same time, from their perspective, you have to be a fairly good player. Like a Nikolai Ehlers, how are you going to ask for more money than Mark Scheifele?
Well, you know, except I don't know that necessarily, that teams' internal salary structures matter as much anymore, given that every contract, it seems, is signed with a new, you know, with the new circumstances around the NHL. I mean, once the McDavid contract got signed this offseason, that sort of changed the scale for all future contracts going forward. So I agree with you, you know, that Ehlers shouldn't, maybe at this point in time yet, make more than Mark Scheifele. But at that same point, should Scheifele make more than Blake Wheeler? And so I don't think that you look at a team's internal, what they've paid out previously, to determine future expenditures.
And Drew, a year or 2 years down the road, Toby Enstrom's contract is going to be off the books. Tyler Myers' contract is going to be off the books. And I'm not saying that the Jets aren't going to re-sign Tyler Myers or Toby Enstrom, but I would venture to guess that if they are re-signed,
it's at a way lower price.
You're looking at a lower price, especially Toby Enstrom. I mean, I don't think anyone is going to argue that Toby Enstrom is a $5 million defenseman, mm-hmm. right?
Nobody's going to make that argument.
Right. And so I think you're probably looking at a $2 or $3 million defenseman as far as I'm concerned. And when you're talking about Tyler Myers, I mean, maybe, you know, you're still talking about a $4 or $5 million defenseman. But the point is the Jets have options. Aside from Dustin Byfuglien, they don't don't have any other defensemen that are under contract for 4 years. Dmitry Kulikov's under contract for 3 years. Then obviously Josh Morrissey, you have to factor in that at that point, he's going to be on his second deal 2 years from now. But I really do think that the Jets have done a good job managing their salary cap, because they know Patrick Laine is due for a big raise. They know Nikolaj Ehlers is due for a big raise. They know Jacob Trouba is due for a big raise. So they factor all that in, and I don't think that Brian Little's contract is going to affect that at all.
When we come back, we shift our focus to the start of Winnipeg Jets camp. We look at the position battles. We look at the lines. We look at how training camp is set to shake out. That's coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
There's something comforting about hearing Mr. Bayock's voice, in my humble opinion. The dulcet tones of Dennis.
I saw Dennis yesterday at the Iceplex.
I'm sure you did. And he was looking, splendid after a nice summer
out.
Yeah,
he had a nice haircut.
Yeah? Well, there you go.
He had a good haircut.
There you go. Dennis always looking sharp. Always nice to hear the voice of Dennis Bayock. It sounds like we're going to be having a rotating cast of characters on the color analysis on TSN3 Jets broadcast to start the season. That news coming out, I believe, yesterday. A little bit of Ray Ferraro, a little bit of Dave Poulin, a little bit of Jamie McLennan, and then they're going to be auditioning some guys like Nick Boynton, I think I saw, the former Arizona Coyote.
That makes sense why he followed me on Twitter.
Nick Boynton?
Yeah.
I just thought it was for your recipes. This is how you cook pierogies at 3 a.m.
I made spaghetti the other night.
How'd that go?
Actually, it was pretty good.
Were you supervised? Did Naomi supervise
you? Well, she made the sauce, and I just boiled the noodles.
So you boiled water is basically what you accomplished.
Yeah, that's not making spaghetti.
Yeah. You boiled water is basically what you're
saying? Like how I said noodles there? You mentioned Jamie McLennan.
Oh, well done. That's good. That went right over my head.
Yeah. No, I like that. I mean, obviously, the sheriff was the man, and, you know, it's unfortunate that he left to Vegas, but we wish him all the best. It's a great opportunity for him, but, you know, to have, you know, former players like Ray Ferraro and Jamie McLennan and Dave Poulin, the rotating cast. You mentioned Nick Boynton. Yeah. I mean,
our buddy Trevor Kidd's going to get some games.
Drop the puck right now. Yeah. Let's go.
Yeah. Well, first, get rid of these obnoxious 7 exhibition games that are going to make me want to stab my eyes out repeatedly, but then we can drop the puck. In any event,
I thought doing the show was going to make you stab your eyes out.
That does too. Don't worry. At this point in time, I've gone through a lot of different eyeballs at this point. This segment of the show brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys, known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com. Check out their showroom, 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. As we mentioned, of course, Jets training camp underway. They're on the ice at Bell MTS Iceplex this morning if you're looking for something to do. From your perspective, guys, we know that this is the first season in which the Jets organization themselves, not the fans, not the players even necessarily, but the Jets organization, the quote-unquote brain trust, seems to really be putting pressure on themselves, publicly stating their intention, their goal of making the playoffs. Most years, it's a little wishy-washy, well, developing players, we got so many young guys, blah, blah, blah. This is the first year that they really do seem to be putting an emphasis on not just making the playoffs, but, you know, getting in and making some noise in the playoffs.
I like it.
I like it, too. Does this mean, does that extra pressure that's coming from the front office and from ownership, does that make for a more interesting training camp to start the season?
And the players.
Well, the players always say the same things, though. The players never start a season.
I think you've heard it more this year, though, Drew. I think you've heard it more from especially the leaders of the team, the Blake Wheelers, the Mark Scheifeleys, right? Yeah. I think Matthew Perreault was very vocal in the summer. We talked about that back in August. So, no, I agree with you, Drew. I do think it is putting more pressure on the entire organization, but that's a good thing, right? I don't think any fan wants to hear that their team isn't trying to make the playoffs or their goal isn't to make the playoffs. And it should be when you've missed the playoffs 5 of 6 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, sure, the rhetoric has definitely been amped up leading up to training camp, and we're underway here with FanFest today, all day at the Iceplex, and then yesterday was the on-ice testing, right? So, I mean, you're talking about an organization, I think, that sees how much talent they have right now on the ice, and they know that this is the time for them. And, you know, you've heard the slogan, rise together and all of that, but really, I mean, forget all of that, guys. I mean, they know that they have to make the playoffs this year. And I've used the examples of Toronto and Edmonton before. I mean, not many people expected either of those teams to make the playoffs, certainly Toronto. I mean, Toronto goes from a last-place team to almost getting to the second round,
yep.
Right? I mean, people, it was only, what, 5-6 months ago that the Leafs took the Capitals to 6 games and they almost scared the President's Trophy winners and got to the second round, right? So I think when you're the Jets organization and you see, okay, Toronto gets Austin Matthews and they have, you know, 9 or 10 rookies in the lineup, look what they did. They made the playoffs, and not only did they make the playoffs, they almost got to the second round, right? So I think the Jets know that, and there should be this pressure on the team.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that, you know, if you don't have the playoffs with the talent that you have as your goal, minimum. I mean, that's your minimum goal with a group as talented as the Jets have right now. I mean, if everything's solidified with the goaltending, the Jets are going to be, you know, if they're core. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of things that you have to presuppose. You're assuming that the team is going to be healthy. But provided that this group can stay relatively healthy, they have a decent amount of depth that they can call on in terms of if you lose one guy, you can fill him in with another guy. It's not like the lean years where you were, you know, you lost a guy like, I won't, you know, whatever name, doesn't matter. You lost him, and then next thing you know, there's no replacement. You're going to the ice caps in that situation, and it's really it's desperation, but it's not really going to do anything to benefit that team. He's just kind of filling a spot. It's not like that anymore. You really have guys like, you know, a Nick Petan who's kind of waiting for that opportunity to kind of blossom and take that next step, and maybe he does get that via, you know, an injury to somebody else. But the reality is, with the group, this is as talented a forward group as I've seen this team obviously produce, and I think that there is in the NHL. I mean, this is an extraordinarily talented core group of players. Their defense is extremely good. And I think Connor Hellebuck's an excellent goaltender. I think Steve Mason has got a lot to prove. He certainly was extraordinarily candid yesterday in his interviews. And if he can kind of come in with that chip on his shoulder and wanting to prove himself, and he plays to his potential, then the minimum people should be talking about is the playoffs, and this team needs to be thinking about not just the playoffs, but winning a round or two.
And Dave, I'm not saying that the Jets are similar to the Oilers or the Leafs in terms of their player makeup or any of that. I'm just saying, if you're the Winnipeg Jets and you saw the Edmonton Oilers go out and acquire Cam Talbot, they went out and they acquired Adam Larson, right? You're hoping that Steve Mason is your Cam Talbot, and you're hoping that Dmitry Kulikov is your Adam Larson, and then you've obviously added a guy like Matt Hendricks to play kind of that Zach Kassian role. We remember how good Zach Kassian was in the playoffs. So I'm not saying that, you know, the Jets are the same team as the Oilers, because I would say that Connor McDavid is a better player than Patrick Laine. So I think a player like Connor McDavid is different. Even though Patrick Laine is an unbelievable player, I'm just saying Connor McDavid is a step above,
Connor McDavid,
I think, everybody.
Connor McDavid is the second best player in the NHL.
I would agree with that.
And you can make the argument that, you know, at some times he's the best player in the NHL.
You could certainly make the argument he's the best offensive player. I think when you're talking about the best all-around player,
it's still Crosby.
I mean, until someone else wins the Stanley Cup. I mean, Sid's got 3 of them now, right? So, mm-hmm. But the point is that with the moves that they've made, the Jets have never been more aggressive in the offseason than they were this past year. They've never gone out and acquired a free agent goaltender like Steve Mason, right? And they've had their moves in years past. I mean, we remember the Olli Jokinen signing. We remember the Matthew Perreault signing. But this is the most aggressive they've been, and they've admitted that. So when you shore up the goaltending, you shore up the left side of the defense, you go out and get a guy like Matt Hendricks to supply that truculence on the fourth line and a little bit of a penalty-killing ability, I think that there are no more excuses, and we're going to hear about that a lot. So I know that the expectations are higher, and they should be. I mean, if the team doesn't make the playoffs, there should be changes.
Let me ask you guys this. How do you handicap the race for those bottom six spots? Or maybe not even the bottom six. We know some guys are more locked in than others to play in those bottom six roles. But how do you handicap that race? Because I think that's it's probably the focus for Winnipeg Jets training camp, is there's too many guys battling for the bottom of the roster spots and then not enough spots for them.
Well, how many guys do you have on one-way contracts right now that are forwards, right? I think you have 14, if I'm not mistaken.
14 is correct.
Yeah, so I mean, when you're talking about guys like Brandon Tanev and Michael Scarbosa, Was Scarbosa on a one-way deal?
He's on a one-way deal.
He is, so
I think he's maybe the forgotten man. So right. I think he would have to have a tremendous training camp to win a regular
right.
spot in the lineup.
At best, he's a 13th forward, and that's no disrespect to him. That's just because the Jets have so much depth. But that was before they acquired Matt Hendricks. Now you throw in Matt Hendricks, who's on a one-way deal. I mean, he's a guy that, I mean, I would be shocked if he went to the AHL. So I think
they have 14 forwards on one-way contracts, and that doesn't include Nick Petan and Kyle Connor,
right.
who are also battling for right. regular playing time on the Winnipeg Jets. So you really are looking at 16 forwards for 12 spots.
Well, you're looking at 10 forwards for 6 spots in the
yes.
bottom 6, right, Drew?
That's
so
correct.
I mean Dave will speak to this as well. I mean, I think Nick Petan should start the year in the AHL, and again, I know there are a lot of Jets fans out there who are going to get on me about this. I really like Nick Petan. Actually, you go back to the 2013 draft and you look at my tweets, I wanted the Jets to take Nick Petan. So it's not that I don't like Nick Petan, it's that because I think right now his development is better suited in the American Hockey League. He's still a young player. So when you're talking about handicapping the bottom 6 forwards, Drew, I mean, your guess is as good as mine. It's going to be tough because when you're talking about some of those talented forwards, I mean, Marco Dano is going to play in the NHL this year. Joel Armia is going to play in the NHL this year. But again, when you're talking about Brandon Tanev, Michael Scarbosa, those guys are probably going to start the year in the AHL as far as I'm concerned.
Is Matt Hendricks in the lineup on opening night in your opinion? I mean, obviously...
He's for sure going to be on the team.
Well, yeah. I mean, you don't think there's any chance that they try and put him through to waivers?
Why would they sign him late in the off season to do that?
Well, I think he probably
will be in the lineup. Yeah.
You think he's one of the 12 forwards?
13.
That Paul Maurice is going to rely on.
Sure, one of the 12 to start, but certainly one of the 13.
Okay. I mean, that's what I think a lot of people are, especially those who are more analytically bent, are not fans of Matt Hendricks' game.
I think you could argue that a guy like Brandon Tanev was rushed into the NHL a little bit, and I realize that he had a good preseason last year, but I mean, he struggled, and that's why he ended up playing significant time with the Moose as well. So it's not doesn't mean that Brandon Tanev can't be an NHLer. He's 25 years old. He has a lot of time to prove himself, but I think bringing in a guy like Matt Hendricks probably tells you what they think of some of those forwards.
And it doesn't even include, we even haven't even spoken about Brendan Lemieux, who, of course, the team has such high hopes for. He's had a couple injury-plagued seasons.
I'll let Dave get in here, but if Brendan Lemieux, knocks the socks off of the Jets coaching staff and management, maybe he does start the year. But again, you're talking about a young player, right? So even if Brendan Lemieux doesn't make the opening night Jets roster, doesn't mean he won't play in the NHL next year or in the years to come. I just think you only have a certain amount of roster spots, right, Drew?
Sure.
So you throw in Brendan Lemieux, now we're talking about 17 forwards competing for 12 spots, right?
Right.
Yeah, I think as he touched on pretty much all the points, I would, in that this is there's still possibilities. There's still places to be had from some of these bottom six players, because the fact of the matter is, now I'm not so sure. Normally I would say I'm not so sure about Hendricks. I wouldn't be adverse if they, seeing them put him in the AHL. I don't think it's, not that I wouldn't be adverse, but I wouldn't be surprised, sorry. But based on what Palmieri said yesterday, he did talk about having Hendricks and he talked about the experience factor. So I was, after hearing him being interviewed yesterday, I kind of was under the impression that Maurice is more inclined to keep Hendricks up and maybe in the lineup. I thought he may start in the press box, perhaps. But again, that's what training camp establishes. And that's the whole point, right? Like, that's why you could see a player. Maybe Kyle Connor isn't ready. Maybe Brendan Lemieux is. Like, that's the whole point. That's why they have training camp, is that you're not trying to figure out who your top six forwards are with the Jets. You're trying to figure out, really, your bottom.
You just mentioned Kyle Connor. It's surprising we didn't talk about him that much. We've talked about him in previous weeks. I mean, I do think that Connor will make the team, even though, nothing is set, guys. I mean, you have to battle for your roster spot. But Connor, I think, with his ability, and not only, his upside, but the way he played in the American Hockey League the last 20 or 30 games, Dave knows better than anybody how good he was in the American Hockey League. I think he is ready for the NHL.
It'll be fascinating to watch it unfold over the next few weeks leading up to opening night, which is, not that far away from now, Wednesday, October 4th, as the Jets and the Leafs will do battle then. When we come back, Michael Trakos, he's the national hockey writer for Post Media, he's going to join us on the program. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
25 minutes before the top of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuke, Ezra Ginsberg, we're all in studio with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can text us here in studio. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. Of course, for all your latest Winnipeg Jets news, audio, all your Jets information is available on our website. That's IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Michael Trakos. He's the national hockey writer for the Post Media Network. Michael, good morning. How was your summer?
Hey, pretty good, boys.
Nice to be back talking about hockey, eh, Michael?
Yeah, you know what? This time last year, we're talking World Cup, so it's kind of a weird feeling to be back in training camp mode, but... This is great. I think around the league, there's just so much optimism around the Canadian teams. And for once, it doesn't feel like kind of hyperbole, where we can actually think about maybe five or six of the teams actually qualifying for the playoffs and potentially contending.
Well, you know, I'm looking at your most recent article and the headline, and I know you don't write the headlines, is Be Patient, Canada. Your NHL teams are still developing. I think patience is very short for a lot of teams, especially here in Canada, because to your point, as you just mentioned, Michael, I think people see more optimism that streak of, you know, since 1993, you know, 25 years entering this season since a Canadian team has won the Stanley Cup. I think people can see that streak ending maybe as early as this year.
Yeah, well, let's be realistic. I think everyone sees what Edmonton was able to do last year. And when you're looking at Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl and just even what they were able to do this summer in getting Ryan Strome, I think that's going to be a great addition. And I think a guy like Jesse Puljujarvi is going to take a step forward. So there's no reason to think that Edmonton, A, is going to be in the playoffs, and that, B, if they get the same kind of goaltending from Cam Talbot, that they should be one of those teams from the West that you're saying, okay, I would put them in a group with maybe Dallas and maybe Chicago and maybe one or two other teams as potential Stanley Cup favorites. And then from the East, I don't count out Montreal when they've got Carey Price, and I like what maybe Jonathan Drouin can bring up front. I like Ottawa if Erik Karlsson is the same Erik Karlsson that he was last year, and if some of the kids like Thomas Chabot and maybe Colin White can make similar impacts to what we saw from some of the rookies last year. And Toronto's kind of a wild card. We don't know what they're going to bring in year two, but we think with the additions of Patrick Marleau and Ron Hainsey that those kids should only get better. And Winnipeg, that's the one team. And Calgary, another one. They should be taking a step forward with the goaltending that they got. But Winnipeg is the one team that I'm looking at, maybe not as a Stanley Cup threat, but definitely a team that, and you guys are probably talking to death about this, but it's time for them to make their kind of push and be a playoff team, and there's no reason to think that they can't do it as long as they get some health and better goaltending than they got last year.
Mike, earlier this week, Leafs general manager Lou Lamoriello said that the team wouldn't be naming a captain, and then Leafs coach Mike Babcock reiterated what Lou Lamoriello said and said that this year the team won't have a captain. Do you think the reason why they're not naming a captain is because they don't want to put that extra pressure on one of their players? And let's be honest, is the next captain not going to be Austin Matthews?
Yeah, the next captain, everyone knows, is going to be Matthews, and it's a matter of, okay, do you need him to be captain this year? And, you know, in Edmonton, they felt that, I guess, this was Connor's team, and after seeing him at the World Cup and after seeing him at the World Championship, there was no reason to think that this guy wasn't already a leader in his own right, and it was fine. I don't think Connor took a step backwards with that extra pressure, but you know, in Toronto, they're being smart about it. And this is so rare where every decision is made. I'm dying to write a column going, oh, you idiots. Why would you do this? Why would you sign this guy? Why would you make this guy captain? But you know what? They're making smart plays here. And just whether Matthews is a captain this year or next year doesn't hurt the team going forward. And I think, if anything, you just want to see some more growth out of these guys. And when you got a kid who's coming off a 40-goal season, and really, to everyone in the room and everyone outside the room, it's clear that he's going to be the man this year, and the team's going to go as far as maybe him and Frederik Andersen and that take them. But yeah, you know, why would you put that extra burden on him, especially when you've got a guy like Marleau coming in who's a veteran and who's going to have a voice of his own? Just let things happen naturally and organically. And I think by this time next year, for sure, Austin Matthews is going to be the captain.
Michael, you've written about the NHL's interest in China, and the NHL slated to play some exhibition games in China. What do you anticipate that doing for the game in the big land of China?
Well, there's so many eyeballs there. Let's be honest. Like, when you look at their television ratings, it's hilarious because we always talk in the millions, and they're talking in the billions. And it's such a difference there when I remember talking to a Chinese broadcaster, and he was saying, oh, it was so disappointing, the numbers that the NHL are doing. And I remember asking him, like, oh, what are they? And he's saying, like, talking about them, these millions of people were only watching. And I was like, this is like being shown in the middle of the night, and you're still getting that kind of viewership. So I think it's about time that the NHL catches up to the NBA and starts tapping into that market. Are they the most diehard hockey fans? No, but there's no reason why you can't convert some of those guys into hockey fans. And with the KHL already there, there are some homegrown Chinese players. You've got the Beijing Olympics coming up in another 4 years. So it does make sense that the NHL is finally trying to capitalize. As to what it will do, you know what? You might end up with some more Vancouver Canucks fans because they're playing over there, and LA Kings fans, but I don't think you're necessarily going to see it as, say, China is now has surpassed Europe as the next biggest fan base outside of North America. But, you know, it's a start at least.
Michael Trakos is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Michael is the national hockey writer for Post Media. Michael, you mentioned the Vancouver Canucks, and as you well know, we have a fan base that stretches from coast to coast to coast here. If you're on the left coast of Canada and you're a Canucks fan, give me a reason for optimism this season.
Oh boy. Well, you know what? I don't know what your expectations are if you're a Vancouver Canucks fan. I don't know if you're saying making the playoffs is that the end goal, or just maybe bottoming out and perhaps procuring the number one pick overall and getting a defenseman like Rasmus Dahlin. Should that be the goal? Because you look at what Toronto, you look at what Edmonton, you look at what even Winnipeg has right now, and it all starts at the draft, whether it's getting a guy like Nikolai Ehlers in Winnipeg or Patrick Laine or Mark Scheifele, or in Toronto getting Matthews, Marner, and Nylander. Like, you need to, maybe not bottom out, but you need to have a top three pick, and Vancouver's got a couple already with Ualevi and I forget what the kid's name is, Peterson, that they got this year, but they need more. So I don't know if being competitive and sneaking into the playoffs is necessarily going to be fine for them in the end result, and I don't think that's necessarily what's going to happen this year. So you're talking about optimism. Well, we'll see what Brock Besser provides this year in really his first full NHL season. I think Bo Horvat due for another kind of step forward, but really this should be a team that you're kind of hoping misses the playoffs and procures a top three pick.
Michael, back to the Toronto Maple Leafs. You mentioned Patrick Marleau earlier, and I know there's a lot of talk in Toronto right now about where Patrick Marleau is going to play as far as which center he's going to play with. Do you think he's better suited to play with Auston Matthews, or do you think he's better suited to play with Nazem Kadri?
You know, I think Toronto's got a luxury right now where I don't think it matters where Marleau plays, whether it's with Matthews, whether it's with Kadri, even if it's with Tyler Bozak, because all three lines were able to do damage last year. When you look at on Bozak's line, you had Mitch Marner and James Van Riemsdyk, who were top five on team scoring, and with Kadri, he was a 32-goal scorer, so definitely he can play with them. And I think the worry in Leafland is that you don't want to mess up what Auston Matthews had with William Nylander and Zach Hyman last year, where you had two skilled players and you had a plugger in Hyman who was willing to get the puck for everyone. So I think initially we're going to see Marleau with Kadri, and it's potentially going to be either Marleau, Kadri, and a guy like Connor Brown, or potentially Leo Komarov. But I think at some point during the season, we're going to see Marleau with all three lines. And that's a luxury. Where you can say, I think right now, everyone is projecting on the Matthews line as the number one line, but I think at the end of the day, when you look at the combined points out of all three players on the line, they're all going to be fairly similar. So Toronto quite possibly could have three number one lines, and whether Marleau's playing on one, two, or three won't matter a whole lot.
Michael, what was your reaction to Alexander Ovechkin's article about the lack of NHL Olympic participation? And do you anticipate it having any impact on his play this season?
Yeah, that's a tough one. You know how much it means to him. And not just him. Like Eric Carlson has been chiming in as well. Really, I think a lot of the Euros are really upset, and the Canadians are sort of upset, but they're not being as outspoken about it. It's tough to say. I think once the season starts, I think that's going to be almost water under the bridge. I think it's good that he's getting these comments out now and that guys, like I said, Carlson and others are speaking up now and voicing their displeasure. But once the season starts, they're going to be in full business mode. I don't think Alex Ovechkin is going to have a down year thinking about, oh, I should be playing in the Olympics. I think he'd love to play there. If there's an opportunity where he could still go and fulfill his duties as a capital, he would love to do that. If not, well, his number one goal is to win a Stanley Cup. And that's, aside from winning a gold medal, that's the one kind of black mark on his resume. So I expect that, yeah, once the puck drops and we're talking NHL hockey, this whole Olympic debate is going to go by the wayside and might even be ignored by the majority of hockey fans in North America.
Looking at other Canadian teams that have huge question marks, when you're looking at the Ottawa Senators and Eric Carlson's injury, do you think there's any way they survive that if Carlson's out a significant amount of time?
You can't replace Eric Carlson. Let's be honest. He's a top two, top three talent in the league. Like aside from Connor McDavid and Sidney Crosby, he's the one guy that would pay money to see on a nightly basis. And he's a game changer for the Ottawa Senators. So you don't survive, I don't think, as long for an extended period of time. But if we're talking in the weeks, maybe a guy like Thomas Chabot, like I said, he's just got so much confidence going into the season. I know we're talking about a guy that's only played basically a dozen games in the NHL, but coming off an MVP season in the World Juniors and in the Quebec Junior League, going to the Mem Cup, this Chabot is totally ready now, I think, to make that impact with the NHL. And you know what? There's an opportunity with Mark Messier gone in Ottawa and Eric Carlson injured where the Senators wouldn't have any problem with Chabot kind of doing what Charlie McAvoy did with the Bruins and really stepping in and playing some serious minutes and showing that he not only belongs to the NHL but belongs in that Calder trophy race right away. So that's the only way that they can survive it, because when you look past Chabot and Carlson, you're looking at Cody Ceci, you're looking at Dion Phaneuf, and I think we know what we're getting with those two players.
Michael, we'll let you go on this last question. In Montreal, who's under more pressure, the $10.5 million man, Carey Price, or the new savior, Jonathan Drouin?
Easily, it's Drouin. Whenever you're a Quebec-born player, there's a ton of pressure going into Montreal, never mind his age, which is, what, 22 years old, and then you throw the fact that he's now being tasked to be your number one or number two center. Good luck, kid. It's going to be a rocky first month there, I predict, in Montreal.
Michael Tracos is the national hockey writer for Post Media. He's a great friend of the program. Michael, glad to have you back on. We'll do it again real soon. Thanks for joining us.
Awesome, boys. Enjoy deliberating over line combinations in day two of training camp today.
You know that's what we love, Michael. Thanks again, buddy. When we come back, Patrick Laine, is he better suited on the left wing or the right wing? That's what we're going to discuss next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Laine, his shot, he scores. Patrick Laine, a perfect shot. And it's his 33rd goal of the season, and we're tied up at three.
Number 29, Patrick Laine, he's telling you, explaining exactly why he's earned the label Rookie Phenom right here in transition. That's from the tops of the circles. You don't beat NHL goaltenders from there without a lethal release.
The rookie phenom Patrick Laine, Jets fans hope he avoids the dreaded sophomore slump. I think most people don't expect that to happen when you have that much talent. Usually, slump is not a word that is associated with you. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 10 minutes before the top of the hour. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
You know, Frank and Mauro wouldn't be very happy with the way you guys are leaving those Timbits on the table right now.
It's early.
I mean, what's the problem? Have you guys lost your appetite?
It's only 9:50. I usually am fueled up enough until at least 10:30, 10:45, and then I need to be fueled by Timbits.
Pass them to Shawnee. He'll have a couple.
Okay, we'll give them over to Shawnee in a minute or two. Yeah, I will have some. There you go. Patrick Laine, gentlemen, of course, he is the Winnipeg Jets superstar scorer. Left wing or right wing? That's the big debate surrounding Patrick Laine right now, is that people are unsure as to which wing he's better suited on. This is from an article in the Winnipeg Free Press. Allow me to quote it. Where Laine eventually lands this season as a left or right winger could impact his production and possibly his defensive play. He played on both sides with the Jets last season, but although he's right-handed, grew up in the game with a preference for his offside, playing the left wing. However, Jets head coach Paul Maurice believes his most effective position could be as a right winger. Long term, I think his choice would be to play the left, said Maurice on Monday. But after the year on the right, when we moved him over, he agreed the game was easier for him on his forehand. I'm probably going to start him on the left again. I know that's where he wants to get to. As soon as he feels real comfortable and he can get up the ice on his offside, then he'll probably fit there. But he's going to play left and right this year. For Laine, it's not an issue. Well, I don't really care, said Laine. If Paul wants me to be a lefty or right, I don't care. I can play both. There's some pros and cons in both.
Are you going to read the whole article, Drew?
No, that was just the snippet of that I was going to read there. So, Laine, a left winger or a right winger? You know, given what you just heard and given what you know and given what you've seen.
I'm just giving you a hard time like I always do, but I think it's a fascinating debate here. Maybe not a debate, but a fascinating situation, right, Dave? Because you have a player, and not just any player, probably the best pure goal scorer in the league right now, or he's on his way to being the best pure goal scorer in the league. No offense to Alex Ovechkin or Steven Stamkos, but when you're talking about a player like Laine, who can play both the left side and the right side, as you mentioned, Drew, and I don't have the stats here. I mean, maybe Dave knows the numbers, but when you're talking about how many games Laine played on the right side versus the left side, it was pretty even. I would say that he was probably on the right side more last year because he was on a line often with Brian Little and Matthew Perreault, and then you had Ehlers, Scheifele, and Wheeler up there on the top line. So I think Laine did play more on the right side, but he did play on the left side a lot too, especially out on the power play, guys, because when he's on his off wing, it not only gives him an advantage as far as his shot, but it gives him an advantage as far as his playmaking ability, right? He can set up that center in the slot, or he can feed the puck to the defenseman, because the other team's defenseman has to guard against Laine's shot, right? We know how good that shot is. So I think, you know, when you talk about Paul Maurice, I think his preference would be to have him on the right side. And that's because you do have Nikolai Ehlers, you have Kyle Connor, you have Matthew Perreault playing the left side. So if you have Laine on the left side, that bumps someone else down, right? So if Laine's going to be on the top line on the left wing, that means Nikolai Ehlers is going to be the left winger on the second line. Then you have Matthew Perreault on the third line. By the way, having Matthew Perreault on your third line on the left wing is not a bad thing.
Right.
I argued when I was projecting my lines, I liked Matthew Perreault on that third line if Kyle Connor is going to be your left winger on the second line. But, you know, it remains to be seen how much Patrick Laine plays on the left side versus the right side. But really, what should really comfort Jets fans is that Laine doesn't care. And he's just as comfortable on the left side as he is on the right side, right? So whether Paul Maurice uses him on the right side or the left side, this player might only be 19 years old, but he's a very smart player. He'll adapt to whatever side he's on. And I think he's going to score a lot of goals, Dave, whether he's on the left or the right. Right now, it looks like he might start on the left.
Yeah, and I'm not terribly surprised he likes being on the left side, because offensively that's an easier position to be in, right? Because the puck is closer to the center of the ice. You know, you have more options, as he was touching on. And So from an offensive point of view, it's easier. Now, defensively, obviously, on a breakout, it's a little bit more difficult because you're receiving passes, you know, on your backhand as opposed to on your forehand, which is a little bit easier to keep the flow going and get that puck out of the zone. So I think the reason that Maurice is probably wanting Line A to start on the left side is simply because that's going to get him going offensively. That'll get hit those good feelings going. It may not be best for the Jets defensively to have Line A in that sort of situation because, again, the breakout from the defensive zone may be a little bit tougher on his backhand, right? But again, like I said, he's such a versatile player that really left or right, you know he's going to have success. But again, from my perspective, you really want to get Patrick Laine going. You don't want him having any questions about, you know, like you just said at the beginning of the segment, sophomore jinx or that sort of idea. So get him going, get some goals early, not maybe three a night like he touched on that fans might be expecting. But just that idea, like, okay, you got a couple goals the first three games or that sort of thing, and then he's got the flow going. And then as his flow continues, then Maurice may feel the need to put him on that, you know, right side because, of course, the Jets, what are the Jets lacking? It's not their offense that's lacking. It's their defense that was lacking from the goaltending out. Not just, and again, we don't blame just the goaltenders. It's the goaltenders, the defense, and the forwards. It's a team game, right? So the team collectively has to play properly. And again, Patrick Laine is part of that and part of that nucleus. And he has to be playing, you know, obviously a winger isn't as important as a center in the defensive zone, but you still have to play your role. So he has to be on that right. If he's on the left side, there's a lot more responsibility in terms of get breakout.
Dave, it'll all come down to how Paul Maurice wants to roll his lines on that given night or, you know, in a certain stretch of time, right? Because if Patrick Laine is better suited to be playing with Brian Little, I think there's more of a chance you see him maybe on the right side because he's played there in the past. Maybe if you want to load up that top line and you want to have Mark Scheifele, Blake Wheeler, and Patrick Laine, well, doesn't Patrick Laine have to play on the left side? Because I don't see Blake Wheeler at this point in his career being a left winger, right? So, I mean, it really depends, as Dave said, who Patrick Laine is more comfortable with, or more so, who the coaches think he's clicking with, right? If Patrick Laine is really clicking on the second line on the right wing, I don't see them switching that up. I mean, you might see it in-game. I mean, that happens often in-game as far as any player goes, really, or many players. A winger will take a face-off depending on what side of the ice it's on, things like that. Mm-hmm. But when you're talking about a go-forward basis or a game-by-game basis, I think there's a good chance that you're going to see Laine on the left and right side this year. So, you know, it's something that is a definite strength of the Jets. And I think it really is a thing that's difficult for defending teams to deal with, right? Because now you're expecting Patrick Laine to maybe be on the right side, and then you have your defenseman on that side covering him. But maybe the Jets use him on the left side. That makes the matchups a little bit harder, right? So the edge here is all on the Jets.
For the record, what happened at training camp as the on-ice session this morning, and I mean, this is just very preliminary, so don't take it as gospel, is it was Laine on the left side with Scheifele and Wheeler, and it was Ehlers on the right side with Perreault and Little. So that's how the lines were deployed this morning at the Iceplex as Jets sort of, as they hit the ice and did their first set of line rushes.
Right.
Now, that's obviously going to change throughout the course of training
camp.
Well,
now's the time you want to experiment with that stuff, right?
Now's the time you want to see and see how things click. So that's, you know, what they've done. And to sort of address that issue that you had mentioned, Ezzy, about having, if Laine plays the left side, is you almost have too much strength down your left side,
yep,
is that they flipped Ehlers over to his off wing and have him on the right side. So that's sort of, you know, you got Laine, Perreault, Connor down your left wing, and you have Wheeler, Ehlers, and Armia down your right wing.
Right, and I don't know how much Ehlers has played on the right side. To my knowledge, for the most part, he was a left winger in junior with the Halifax Mooseheads. He might have played some right wing, but so maybe Nikolai Ehlers is willing to move on the right side. I would assume that most likely he's going to be the number one left winger for most of the year, but I guess there is the potential that they try him out on the right side. But again, this is the time you do it, right? So whether Laine starts the season on the left wing doesn't necessarily mean he's going to end the season on the left wing.
No, exactly. Time will tell as to how this, and it, like you said earlier, it might even change on a game-by-game basis.
Wingers are able to change their positions a lot easier than a centerman is able to move to the wing, or a natural winger is able to move to the center, right? There are many wingers. I mean, look at Matthew Perreault. Matthew Perreault can play all three forward positions, right? Yes. He's a natural center, but he's played wing the last couple of years. He could also play the right side, right? And when you're talking about a guy like Matt Hendricks, he can play center, he can play the wing as well. So it's much easier for players to switch positions from game to game. But again, I mean, this is a big problem for opposing teams because Laine is just as dangerous on the right side as he is on the left.
When we come back, we check in with the Jets' Central Division rivals in Nashville. Nashville Predators analyst Chris Mason joins us next on the program. Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show coming up next on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN 1290, your home of the Winnipeg Jets. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by the man on my left, Ezra Ginsberg, the man on my far left, Dave Minuk. Pleased to be with you on this Saturday morning. This segment of the program, it's brought to you by our good friends at Bernstein's Deli. That's the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Trying to get a hold of Chris Mason. We know Steve Mason, of course, is the new Winnipeg Jets goaltender. Chris Mason, a former Winnipeg Jets goaltender. You mentioned earlier, Steve
Mason.
No relation. Steve Mason, very candid in his comments yesterday to the assembled media at the Iceplex, you know, saying that he was considering retirement before he was traded from the Blue Jackets to the Philadelphia Flyers, where he sort of resuscitated his career. I mean, he sort of had those ups and downs so dramatically in Columbus, where he went from Calder Trophy winner to really rock bottom on a organization that was almost rock bottom, then went to Philly and sort of bounced back, had a bit of a down year last year, but now he's looking for another, you know, restart or refresh here in Winnipeg. And it was nice to hear him speak so candidly and so honestly about sort of the trials and tribulations associated with being a goaltender through ups and downs like that.
Yeah, and you know how much pressure there is on Steve Mason this year because that was the big free agent acquisition for the Winnipeg Jets, right? So, I mean, yeah, he's always been an honest player, Drew, and, you know, he certainly has had ups and downs in his career, and I think he knows what's at stake here. He knows that he was brought in to play 50-plus games for the Jets, and he knows that he was brought here to be a mentor for a young goaltender in Connor Hellebuck. So I don't think that there should be any surprises about the way Steve Mason was carrying himself. And I think he is going to do a good job because, you know, you talk about some of the down years that Steve Mason had in Philadelphia. But, you know, for the most part, he's been a very consistent goaltender at the NHL level. Obviously, when he came into the league and won the Calder Trophy with the Columbus Blue Jackets. But not only that, I mean, you go back, you know, a few years, Steve Mason was one of the main reasons why the Philadelphia Flyers got into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, Claude Giroux, Jakub Voracek, Wayne Simmonds. There's a lot of good players on that Philadelphia Flyers team still. But Steve Mason was the number one goaltender for that team. And, you know, his numbers were very good. And his numbers have been very good throughout his career, with the exception of, you know, a few blips in Columbus and Philadelphia. So I think that no one should be surprised, you know, that Steve Mason knows what is expected of him.
I thought his remarks were remarkably candid yesterday. I thought he was very open and honest and forthright. You know, it's interesting to hear a player kind of talk about vulnerabilities, which sometimes players attempt not to do because they want to look like they're impervious. And I thought it was interesting to hear him talk about how it was a dark time in Columbus and how he really would have considered retiring at the end of that contract had he not had that trade that, as he said, resuscitated his career. So I thought it was interesting. I also thought, which Jets fans should take heart in, is the fact that he talked about mentoring Connor Hellebuck. And he talked about how when he had success in his Calder rookie season, when he won the Calder, and then afterwards, you know, a little bit of a stumble. And he's talking about how important it was to kind of be able to mentor a young goaltender. Well, that's exactly what Connor Hellebuck needs. He needs, like, Connor Hellebuck and Michael Hutchinson can't really feed off each other, whereas this relationship can potentially work it perfect for the Winnipeg Jets in the future.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome to the program Nashville Predators broadcaster Chris Mason. Chris, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning. Sorry, I just missed you. I was a couple minutes late.
All good, Chris. No worries at all. Before we get into talking about the Predators, and you know they're obviously coming off the Stanley Cup finalists last season, we were just spending the last couple seconds talking about the pressure that a goaltender will face. And you know we were talking about Steve Mason, you know, and he was very forthcoming in his comments yesterday to the Jets media, saying that you know the game when he was you know before he went to Philadelphia from Columbus, he was really in a dark spot and he wasn't enjoying hockey anymore, and he was considering retirement. You know, as a goaltender, when you lose that confidence, and you would know as a you know as a former NHL goaltender yourself, what's it like playing when you don't have the confidence necessary to think that you really are you know that capable to be an NHL goalie?
It's tough, and you know the biggest thing I think you know for athletes and especially goaltenders, you have all the external pressure. Obviously, it's a high pressure position. You have the media, the fans, the coaches, everybody looks to you to be that stabilizing force. But when you internally put that extra pressure on you, and it just, you know, when you're in a tough, you're in a little funk or you're going through a tough stretch, it just really weighs you down. And you obviously, you know, you want to come out every game and you want to you know, give the team a chance and be one of the reasons why your team's having success. But when you're not, you can get in that situation where it just keeps mounting and mounting, and you know it's as a goaltender, it's you're in the position to single-handedly have an outcome on every single game. You're the hero or the goat, and when you're going through that tough time, like Steve Mason was probably referring to, it's just after a while, if it goes on past a certain stretch, it's just tough. And but on the flip side of that, When you can finally get past that and things are going well, it's like any athlete. But for a goaltender, you're front and center every single time. Every play that you make, every save, even if you don't catch it clean or you don't, you know, make a clean save, you have that self-doubt. And that's the most, one of the most paralyzing things as a goaltender. So it's tough. It's tough. But I'm looking forward to seeing Steve in Winnipeg this year. I think that was one of the best signings of the offseason. I think it's going to make Connor Hellebuyck a better goaltender. I think that having that veteran goaltender that's done it before and been there is something that's going to get Winnipeg to the next level.
Chris, sticking with goaltending and Nashville Predators goaltender Pekka Rinne, Pekka's always had those doubters that have said that he can't do it come playoff time, and obviously, you know, that happened last year when Pekka Rinne almost took the Nashville Predators all the way, did take them to the Stanley Cup final, but is it safe to say that going into this season, there's a lot less pressure on Pekka Rinne because they had that long Stanley Cup run last year?
I don't ever think there's less or more pressure on anybody. There could be more. I think for him, and he's spoken on this at training camp already quite a bit, is there's a realization. I think as a goaltender and as a player, you know, to get to the Stanley Cup final, you know, if you've never done it before, you don't know if you can do it. You know, you every team goes in, hey, our goal, we want to make the playoffs, and event. Ultimately, we won the Stanley Cup. Nashville has never been as far as they were this year. But having that experience as a player, you realize, hey, I've seen everybody else do this. I don't doubt that anymore. I know I can get there. So I think coming into this season for him, that's one of the things that's eluded the Predators and Pekka Rinne. But now he knows that he can get there. He's done it before. So I think that's a very powerful thing.
Chris, there's no timetable to name a new captain for the Predators. Who do you expect to be getting the C? And do you think it should happen sooner rather than later?
This is a tough one, and this is they've went through this. You know, last season they lost Shea Weber. I think Mike Fisher was the consensus pick for everybody outside and inside the organization. This year, I think it's a little different. I think there's quite a few candidates that they could look to. I don't know the urgency. I know you know Ryan Ellis is one of the guys that's being talked about, and he's out for a lengthy period of time to start the season. So I don't know if that will influence the decision at all, but they have some capable guys. It's just a matter of who they go. And I think at this point it's uncertain, but I know Roman Josi will be in the conversation, Phil Forsberg, Ryan Ellis, you know, PK Subban, obviously they Ryan Johansson, they want to be more involved in the leadership group. So there's a lot of guys that they could choose. And that's, you know, obviously a coach's general manager decision. I don't exactly know who's completely responsible for that. They're going to get some input from the players and make the decision. So I don't know when that's going to come, but I'm very interested to see who it's going to be as well.
Chris Mason is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Chris is a Nashville Predators analyst on their TV broadcasts. Chris, you know, Ryan Ellis, you mentioned him earlier. He's obviously out of the lineup now for the next few months with that offseason surgery that he required. Does his absence from the lineup really preclude any sort of Matt Duchene trade? Because that was always the scuttlebutt that, you know, maybe the Predators would trade from one of their strengths on the back end to acquire a guy like Matt Duchene from the Colorado Avalanche. And did you ever actually put much stock into those rumors and innuendo?
Well, I think like everybody, when they acquired Emelin, obviously the Ryan Ellis injury update wasn't out yet. So all that speculation, and you heard Duchene at the deadline and at the draft and all that that talk. I personally don't think that they were going to move one of the top four guys. I think they were trying to find a way to do it without moving one of them, with prospects and, you know, maybe some depth players, that type of trade. But I personally don't think, with the success they had last year with those guys, and that was such a big storyline throughout the year and especially in the playoffs, that they would have considered moving one of them.
Well, Chris, we talked about leadership earlier, and, you know, a lot of the focus has been on Mike Fisher, who announces his retirement, and obviously James Neal, who was taken by the Vegas Golden Knights, a couple of the older leaders on the team. But then you look at who David Poile brought in, a guy I know that you played with when you were a member of the Nashville Predators, that's Scotty Hartnell. Do you think a guy like Scotty Hartnell is going to ease some of that leadership that might have been lost when Mike Fisher retired and James Neal went to Vegas?
No question. I think, again, another great signing by the Nashville Predators to fill that void. You know, not only is he a great guy and a great leader, he's got, you know, a wealth of experience. He's been in Nashville before. He's an older guy. He also brings that net front presence that I think Nashville hasn't had as consistently since they lost Patrick Hornquist. I think that was a great sign for the leadership, and obviously the other reasons. And I think Nick Bonino, too. He's a guy. He's been around. He's a similar player to Mike Fisher. You know, centerman. He's both on good sides of the puck. I think they've addressed that. And I find, you know, as a player and, you know, the filling the void of Shea Weber and now Mike Fisher, the good leaders, they always leave their imprint. You know, they leave players understanding what it takes to be a good leader in the dressing room, your work ethic, and your character. And I think that is, especially Mike, he's very involved in developing players' character. There's no better person to lead by example. And I think that he's left this team in good hands.
Chris, what kind of season are you expecting from Kevin Fiala?
It's, you know, he's a guy that obviously he's got the talent. He's got elite level skill. But one of the challenges you have with younger players, it looked like he's starting to figure it out. The biggest issue with some of these young players is learning how to play defense in the NHL. Because I don't think until you get to that level, you've really been challenged as much. You can get away with it in junior. You learn. That's why Nashville's always, for the most part, put a lot of their prospects in Milwaukee. They trust that process, and I think that's one of the biggest things. And his biggest improvement is learning how to play without the puck. And I think he showed really great strides in that aspect in playoffs and at the end of the season. And I think he's definitely got a bright future if he can continue to work on that.
You know, Chris, we talked about Steve Mason earlier, and, you know, as a former Jets goaltender yourself, how do you think Connor Hellebuyck is going to deal with having a veteran goaltender come in and now possibly play more than him?
I think it'll create that competition. It'll create him having to fight to get the net back and make good on his starts. It's gonna take that pressure off of him. You know, he's probably been thrusted into situations the last couple of years that you know, maybe have been a bit too big for him. I'm not saying necessarily that's the case, but it'll give him good time to reflect, to really take himself outside of the, you know, when you have to play every single game, sometimes it's hard to, you know, like we talked about, if when a goaltender's in a funk, to get out of that funk. But when you have a little more time to reflect on it, to work on certain things, and you create that competition, you have a guy like Steve Mason who's been around, he's been through some great stretches, he's been through some tough stretches. I think having a guy like that and being able to have that support, I know as a goaltender, I really relied on my partners as that support system, because you're going through the same thing, and I think it's going to be a great thing for Connor to have him on the team this year.
Chris, we'll let you go on this last question. We know the Predators lost James Neal in the expansion draft to the Vegas Golden Knights. How do they replace that goal scoring?
Well, I think, you know, they are very confident that they can get some more production by guys improving, some of the younger players taking more prominent roles. It'll be very interesting to see how it all plays out. It's easy to have success in small stretches to come up to the NHL and have a good few games, and you look like you're promising and you're going to score a lot of goals. But over an 82-game season, the NHL is such a good league. Teams get a book, players get a book on you, and it becomes more difficult. That's why you often see, you know, rookies come in and they have a tough sophomore situation there. But I think they're expecting some of their younger players to step in more prominent roles, and you do it. You get Scott Hartnell, who's probably good for hopefully 20 goals in front of the net. You bring in Nick Bonino, and he's around the 20-goal mark. So I think they've addressed that fairly adequately.
Chris Mason is a Nashville Predators color analyst on their TV broadcast. Chris, we look forward to seeing you back in Winnipeg this year.
Thanks, guys. I can't wait.
We'll see you again soon. Thanks again, Chris. Okay.
See you guys.
The Ted to break. When we come back, we touch on Drew Doughty's comments and his future in Los Angeles. Is that possibly in question? That's coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Third period. Bob Miller with Jim Fox. Ken Moriarty with us tonight. Patrick O'Neill. Puck fired in. A hard check over in front of the game bench by Doughty.
And Drew Doughty, I talked about controlling gaps. Well, Beauchemin thinks he has time. Bam, wow. Just as he dumps it in. You take a penalty.
If not the best defenseman in the NHL, probably one of the top three defensemen in the NHL, his name's Drew Doughty. Could he be an unrestricted free agent? Could he hit UFA status after the 2018-19 season when he would be only 29 years old? His comments this week to the Hockey News certainly should give Los Angeles Kings fans some pause that may be a possibility. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com and make your teeth ting like they do for Ezzy.
You know, I got to say, guys, it's great to catch up with Chris Mason. It seems like yesterday that we were talking to Chris Mason when he was still a member of the Atlanta Thrashers.
Right before he was, before the team, I guess they had already officially moved here, but they were sort of in that weird transition phase. Chris Mason joined us, gosh, way back when.
Well, that would have been 7 years ago.
That would have been 7 years ago. So, yeah, it's been a long, we've had a long-standing relationship with Chris Mason. Always great to hear from him, and nice that he'll be circling back through the city now as a regular on the Predators
broadcast. And he's doing a great job as an analyst for the Predators and, you know, their whole run to the Stanley Cup Finals last year, so I'm sure we're going to be having him on a few times throughout the year.
Chris Mason, much like Dave Minuk, only wanted to wear an IC 3930 hat, but he wouldn't wear the 5950. Little known fact.
Did we offer him a 5950?
Yeah, he wanted the 5950.
No, Dave, after getting my Chicago White Sox hat in Chicago, obviously, and, you know, that's the first 3930 I've ever had, it's the best because anybody who likes to wear hats, it's so nice to be able to stretch it. And I have a big head.
You do have a big head.
It's 7 7/8, yeah, so I'm almost an 8.
That's a big noggin right there.
So it's nice to have that 3930 that stretches.
Yeah, that's a watermelon and a half that you got on top of that.
Well, it's my big brain, Drew.
Yeah, it's something like that. Let's talk about Drew Doughty's comments. Here's the quote in the article that he spoke with the Hockey News about, it saying, you know, he doesn't care where he plays. He just wants to win a Stanley Cup. that's the gist of the quote, is that it doesn't matter. He can play in Los Angeles. He can play anywhere else. I don't give a bleep where I play. I just want to win cups. That's the bottom line. Drew Doughty, and then, of course, the next day, as always happens, he backtracked the comments, oh, I would want to stay in Los Angeles, blah, 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 blah. Given the where the Los Angeles Kings currently stand, not what I would describe as a Stanley Cup contender, didn't make the playoffs last year, of course, is it conceivable that Drew Doughty is going to hit unrestricted free agency in the 2018-19 season at the conclusion of it?
Well, if he does hit unrestricted free agency, you're going to have 30 other teams calling his agent probably, right, Drew?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're talking about if he isn't the best defenseman in the league, he's a top three defenseman.
Right.
It's kind of tough, guys, after last year's performance, not to say that Erik Karlsson is the best defenseman in the league. But, I mean, really, what are we talking about here? So he's the second best defenseman. That's pretty good, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, Doughty's got 2 years left on his contract. He makes $7 million a year. I would argue that Drew Doughty on his next contract could make 10
a 11, year. Yeah, 10, you know, 11.
Maybe 11, right? Mm-hmm. Especially with the salary cap going up by then, right? We're talking probably an $80 million salary cap at that point, right,
sure.
Drew?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, obviously there are other factors at play here. But the point is, what I thought was interesting is Curtis Zupke of the Los Angeles Times wrote about this, and Drew Doughty actually said after his comments to the Hockey News, he said, at the same time, you never know what can happen. We might not come to an agreement on a contract. They might not want to sign me for what I want or vice versa. So, I mean, he is leaving it out there, guys, that he could be a UFA. And, you know, as far as the LA Kings go, yeah, I don't think they're going to be a playoff team this year. I think, you know, Marian Gaborik's health is uncertain right now.
Yeah.
You know, you just don't have enough good offensive firepower there. You don't. And I don't think they're as good defensively as they were when they won those two cups, right, in 2012, 2014. So, I mean, they're still going to be a good defensive team. Jonathan Quick is a top 10 goalie, in my opinion, maybe even top 5. You've still got a lot of good players there. Jeff Carter, Tyler Toffoli, Tanner Pearson, obviously Andre Kopitar. But the point is, Drew, I mean, a couple of years from now, things change, right? We have to see where the LA Kings are at 2 years from now, because if you're Drew Doughty and you're looking at this Kings team and you're saying, well, this probably isn't going to be a playoff team for the next 2 or 3 years, well, you might say, well, you know, I could go to another team that has a better chance of making, you know, the playoffs, or a team not only that's going to make the playoffs, you'd probably want to be on a team that's going to go all the way. So, and that might be the Toronto Maple Leafs. And, you know, there are obvious connections because Drew Doughty is from the area and all of that,
yeah.
Right? But, I mean, the reality is he could go to a number of teams, Dave. He could go to New York. I mean, he could go to Boston. He could go to
at
Calgary. Who knows?
Drew Doughty can say when he hits unrestricted free agency, assuming, you know, everything stays the same over the next couple of years in terms of his performance, he can say, look, the price tag is going to be $11 million, $11.5 million,
yep.
And pretty much every NHL team will say, okay, we will sign you to that. The question is, he just gets to choose the destination.
Now, just as an aside, I mean, Dean Lombardi has signed some horrible contracts. Mike Richards was a horrible contract, even though I like Mike Richards.
Well, the fact that they're not still paying Mike Richards,
right.
And nobody talks about it in the NHL,
right.
Is one
Brown.
Of the biggest...
Yep.
I mean, they should still be paying Mike Richards' contract. He was never actually... You know, his legal problems turned
right.
out to be nothing.
Right.
And for some reason, the Kings got out from underneath the
right.
contract. It's one of those... there's a lot that hasn't been reported on that story that I think will eventually come out, hopefully will, that I think will leave people wondering how the Kings got out from underneath that contract.
And aside from Mike Richards' contract, Dave, I mean, Dustin Brown's contract was a bad contract. Marian Gaborik was a bad contract. I think Andre Kopitar, you got to sign him. I mean, he's a top 10 center in the NHL as far as I'm concerned. Maybe you signed him to too many years, but you had to lock him up coming off of the two cups. As far as Brown and Gaborik goes, I mean, they would be more than happy to get rid of those contracts, right? Their salary cap situation is better than it was a couple of years back, guys.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, I mean, Drew Doughty is going to have to reevaluate how he sees this team going forward, right? So... who knows? Maybe he could be a UFA 2 years from now. I wouldn't be shocked if he was.
No, certainly his comments leave open that possibility.
Well, and if you go back to earlier in the summer, in June, when he was talking to, I don't remember who he was talking to, and he was talking about how all Southern Ontario guys, you know, as you said, Drew's from London, Ontario, and all Southern Ontario guys secretly hope for the Leafs. And he said, actually, when he was growing up, that he actually hated the Leafs, but he was, because his dad's team was the Canadians, but he secretly watched all the Leafs games, and he actually became a big Leafs fan. Now, he... he tempered those comments by saying, at the same time, he loves the fact that in L.A., he can walk around with complete anonymity and not have to worry about being spotted, whereas the pressure of playing in a market like Toronto may be too much for someone like him. Mm-hmm. But having said that, you know, again, what would it be like with the Leafs being a team as they're projected right now with the talent they have on an upward trajectory to add a defenseman of his caliber? Now, of course, you're going to have to make that money work because, as you guys are touching on, this is a guy who's going to be asking for big money, and this is a team that's already going to have to pay out a lot of in salary. So is it possible? Is it feasible? I don't know. But, you know, would it be interesting to see a Southern Ontario kid try and go back and help that team, you know, at that point? Because as Michael Tracco said, they're trying to and you hear from Coach Babcock, you hear from Lou Lamoriello, they're really trying to, again, temper the expectations around this Leafs team. They're saying, look, guys, you know, last year we had some nice success. We're going to build on that. This is not a Stanley Cup team yet. But perhaps around that time when Doughty becomes available, maybe they are. And if so, again, maybe he kind of overcomes the unwillingness to play in front of a market like Toronto where he couldn't walk outside without everyone knowing him. Because he's going to have that. Because at the end of the day, what's the bottom line for him? It's winning those Stanley Cups.
That's what he said in his comments there.
And Drew, these questions are going to persist throughout the year because the earliest the Kings can sign him to another contract is next July.
July 1st, right? So, 2018.
That's, I mean, right. You know, Dave mentions the Leafs, and obviously, you know, that makes a lot of sense. We talked about it. He's from Ontario. He's from London. And obviously, the Leafs are now a contending team. But, I mean, if he does become a UFA, he will be the most sought-after UFA since Ryan Suter and Zach Parise in 2012, because Norris Trophy winners just don't come on the UFA market. And no mm-hmm. offense to Kevin Shattenkirk, but as far as I'm concerned, Kevin Shattenkirk is not in Drew Doughty's league.
No,
Drew
no
Doughty, you're talking about, I would argue he's probably already a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, there's no comparison between the two whatsoever.
He's 27 years old, and I realize that sounds ridiculous, but he's got two cups yeah. and two Olympic golds already. So, I mean, you know, I don't think it's that ridiculous to say he's already a Hall of Famer, but the point is, you know, if the Kings lose him, they're going to be rebuilding for a very long time because you just don't replace a guy like him.
From a guy who wants to win Stanley Cups to a team that only wins Stanley Cups, we head to Pittsburgh, where we're joined by Penguins beat writer Sam Werner. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That's coming up next on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.